listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuayhees of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio and your old buddy Bluewater. And this turn around the sun, we've got star of stage, screen, and television, Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf with us. We're going to be talking about the legends of Aztlan and about red-haired giants and all kinds of strange happenings. How are you, Robert? Thanks for coming on the show today.
Doing fine. How's it over there?
Oh, that's pretty good. We've had a little...
There's a swirling thunderstorm.
We've had a little rain here, and typically here in the Ozarks, it's accompanied with a little bit of lightning and thunder, and I don't have one of those UPS things, you know, the uninterrupted power systems, and going to get one real soon.
Well, I remember years ago when I was talking to people about the changes that were going to come and to look for thunder, snow, people thought I was a little bit out of it. Now it's a regular phrase on the weather report.
We get it here, too. We got, this last winter, we had lightning in the winter. I thundered. I couldn't believe it. Well, tell us about these red-headed mummies that you've been talking to.
Mummy madness. Well, to tell you the story, I'd have to go back 20 years, a story that doesn't get out on the other radio. And I was doing a lot of things in the 80s with a friend of mine who went by the name of Speaking Wind. And he had brothers, Chiwe, Nache, and out here in New Mexico, they found down toward a place called Coyote, New Mexico, in an old chapel, they found a Spanish manuscript that was written by a Franciscan monk. And in the manuscript, it talked about the previous civilizations from the perception of the Native American rather than from the Spanish. And there were indications in the manuscript that there was another manuscript that it was in existence in another location in Mexico, which had maps in it that correlated to the information that was in the manuscript that they found written in by hand. And early 1600s, that would give a location to 11 halls of record. So we started, in innocence and curiosity, with a circle of elders out here to explore that. And that began the great adventure that we never could have possibly dreamed. It wasn't always an adventure of excitement and wonderful things happening. I mean, we were dealing with the Catholic Mafia. We were dealing with the Mexican Mafia. We were dealing with agents in black SWAT uniforms and black four-by's, chases in the desert. Since in that time, there was originally 9 in the circle. And out of 9, there were 2 elders who passed away by natural causes this past year. Chiwei, Speaking Wind, Nache, all brothers are dead now. So everybody died as a result of firings that went on in this adventure. What we discovered over that period of time was pretty amazing. Following, we not only found giants, I mean, giants always stir up a lot of, wow, are they real? Do they really exist? Most of the time you'll hear a lot of people talk about them. They'll get up and they'll do a show about them, and you get through with the show and you go, well, what about the giants? If you follow my train of thought. Because they never really talk about them, because most of them have never really seen them. What we see with a lot of people is people taking pictures that belong to other people, making claims to things, and the stories are always like, well, okay, how many were they? What were they like? What conditions did you find them in? And people don't have the answers, because basically they weren't there. What we found was that there was layers of civilizations, and there were many civilizations that were here from the Euro-Mediterranean area, things that we would be knowledgeable of in academic universities. I mean, we have Phoenicians, we have Persians, we have Assyrians, we have Asians, being Chinese, Mongols, and Siberian. We have Romans, Proto-Egyptians, we have Greek, and we have Celts, a lot of Celts. And when I say Celt, it's a phrase that, because of my relationship with Lawrence Gardner, I'm going to explain. Celt is not necessarily a Highlander from Scotland. The Celtic people, if we go to Rome fighting during the time of Caesar, fighting Gaul, well, the Gauls were Celts. And the Celts were also in Spain, Celtiberians. We also had Celts in Carthage. Alexander the Great found his passageways to the Far East through the guidance of his personal Celtic guard, which was his personal bodyguard, in a treaty that he made with the Celts. then, you know, okay, so that was really interesting, because everything's always, you know, my whole thing is that everything has always been from the European perception, you know. History happened according to what the Europeans say. The life of Jesus is all about what the Europeans say. What Egypt was like is based on what the Europeans say. What the Mayans are like is based upon what the Europeans say. And yet, you know, in all fairness, they're notorious for destroying everything that they ever laid their hands on.
Yeah.
And they're also notorious for twisting everything around, re-editing it, and writing their version of the story. And as time goes on and generations go on, what you're dealing with is it's the only story left. And, you know, five generations later, people just accept this, well, this must have been the way it was, when in fact it wasn't that way at all. You know, so my entry into all of this did not come from that school. My entry into all of this came from Mayan elders. It came from Northern Native American elders, people that took me into the fold, so to speak, and showed me things and explained things to me, because I was a very curious guy. I always had a lot of questions. And over the years, I developed a relationship where they know that I don't lift things from sites, I don't sneak away with gold or objects, because I understand that part of the paradigm. I understand the spiritual aspect of things. You don't just go and loot things. Nobody may see you. You know, it's like a kid that steals the cookies from a jar. But, you know, eventually, mom always knows that the jar is awfully low.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't cheat spirit.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of things in my life with people who have tried to cheat spirit, and it never works. But my perception basically comes from an indigenous Western Hemisphere, I would call it Amerindians, because how do we categorize people all the way from Alaska all the way down to Bolivia, that when you follow the historical archaeological facts that tell you where they came from and what they were about, that they came from a vast number of civilizations that were here, that came from the other side of the world through a northern route. They came down basically through a northwest passage over Canada, and then came down through Canada. Everyone always talks about, well, they always came over from Siberia. They went across that way. But, you know, there's a funny part of that story, isn't it? Because they always talk about how they came over from Asia to here. Well, they came over from Asia to here. Why wouldn't they go from here over there?
Yeah.
And recently they've made discoveries in the southernmost portions of Argentina that show that the skeletons, the remains, were not Mongolian, okay? In other words, they were not from Asia. They were, in fact, aborigines that came from somewhere to the west, most likely Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And
so science is starting to put the pieces together.
Well, yeah, we just keep hitting it, you know. We just keep telling them they're wrong, and every time they say that's impossible, we come up with another piece of evidence.
Uh-huh.
And today we have the advantage of having forensic science, which tells us without any bipartisanship, you know, without any prejudice, it says this is this old, this came from here, and this is made from these elements, and these elements are either native, indigenous, or not. You know, this stone came from somewhere in the Adriatic Sea. This stone came from somewhere in southern Africa. And so the science doesn't try to appease anybody's dogma. It just tells you where it's at. We have found evidence in fire pits of steel, you know, which wasn't supposed to come around for Lent. 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
But we had steel 20,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back and they matched it against the metallurgy that was done in Rome. It didn't work. They went back and matched it toward what would be in Sumeria, because the Egyptians had copper and bronze. But the Assyrians, which would be the latest tracked it all the way back that far, and the only thing that we could come up with is that it was close to something in Samaria. The traces of the civilization were beyond 3700 BCE. So that would make it over 6,000 years old.
So,
in America.
So what you're saying then is that this hemisphere was a melting pot long before the modern Europeans got here.
Eons before they ever got here.
Mm-hmm.
They never discovered this place. They rediscovered a place that they had forgotten about. And there are a lot of accountings. You know, when you go in and try to trace this thing, because you're doing it as an archaeologist, and you're trying to reference points, you're trying to reference historical documents, you're trying to reference everything that can give you fact to put a jigsaw puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
And what you come up with is that in the journals of the Spanish conquistadors themselves, they talk about the native people coming up to them with crosses, okay? They talk about native people showing them sacred temples where they would have alabaster statues of a bearded god with long hair and white robes, because he was alabaster, so it was white, but with his hands outstretched. And they looked at this as blasphemy and paganism and some sort of trick of the devil. And then, of course, nobody could possibly have outdone the Europeans as far as architecture. It was impossible for them to have a superior architecture, and so it was basically denied, and yet the architecture here was way in advance of anything of equal period to anything that was in the Euro-Mediterranean area. Okay, I'm not talking about Gothic architecture like Notre Dame in France. I'm talking about if you go back to the Romans, the Carthaginians, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, the architecture here was equal, at least, if not superior, in technology and mathematics.
You're talking about some real heavy-duty mysteries here, and, you know, this information, I don't know, it's not approached very well in schools, because it hasn't been really well understood. And then a guy like you, or a guy like our common friend Three Eagles, or other people, they step forward and try to solve the mysteries. And, you know, what's the first thing that happens? The first thing that happens is, you know, you get called everything but a son of God. And, you know,
list of words that I put in my Mark Twain book.
Well, yeah, you know, and there's that old saying about how many phases does truth go through? You know, at first it rejected as being silly, and I can't remember, but, you know, eventually, you know, truth eventually wins out, usually after the lifetime of the investigator.
You know, it's still like Mark Twain said that a lie can travel halfway around the world while truth is just getting its shoes on.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. we believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Well, I know I bought into the rumor, innuendo, and slander about you. Until that same kind of stuff started happening to me, when people started saying things about me, and they still are, things that I never dreamt that anybody would say about anybody, much less me, the light began to dawn on me. What is going on here? What is it that I'm doing that people... Yeah. What is it? So, you know, I went through, you know, a long period of time where, you know, you were hands off to me. And then when it hit the fan with me with several different people here in this area, that, you know, so I guess I became a comrade in arms with you and began to understand and, you know, eventually contacted you.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that was a misinterpretation of people who thrive on gossip and malicious slander, and but they never get the facts straight, okay? And you go back to years ago when I was a teenager, for crying out loud, and I was in trouble, and, you know, I got arrested, I was put in jail, I mean, you know, like a lot of American kids. And, you know, I guess it depends on the crowd you're with, you know. If you're playing music with Willie Nelson and people, well, they don't talk to you unless you've been locked up in jail at least once. You know,
because the cops listen to that kind of music.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's like, okay, you know, and then I spent my life developing my education, getting my degrees, because people did not understand from where I was coming from. And I was taught in very specific ways by elders. And part of what I was taught, Will, was that I should not read the books. If I read the books, I'm going to have to get rid of all that stuff that I put into my mind.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandem is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandem has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandem's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units.
So it's very exciting, and it's really quite an honor at this time to be working with a doctor like Dr. McCord. You know, the information that he has put out is published in some of the most well-respected, scrutinized, peer-reviewed literature, like, for example, Free Radical Biology and Medicine, an incredibly powerful journal. But these articles and these studies that he has published really make it clear that this is very, very powerful chemistry.
For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging.
Our bodies are producing hundreds of millions of free radicals at any given time. And the notion that we're going to put out that fire or quench that number of free radicals with a single capsule of, for example, vitamin E or vitamin C, really, when you think about it, doesn't make much sense. Rather, the approach is to turn on the genes to make huge numbers of copies of antioxidant chemicals in our body, things like catalase and superoxide dismutase and glutathione.
Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed, because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
So the danger of these free radicals when they're produced as a normal part of our physiology is they induce what is called oxidative stress. And we can consider oxidative stress to be essentially rusting of the human body. And it's not just the parts, but we actually damage our DNA. The very genes that make us who we are to some degree are damaged by the process of oxidative stress, meaning that we can't heal properly and our bodies are more prone to aging.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The immediate benefits of Protandim are, within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time, so the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from. Protandim doesn't interfere with other supplements. If you have a desire to supplement vitamins and minerals, you certainly can continue to do that. Most people in America get a diet that is vitamin replete, meaning you have all the vitamins you need. So vitamin supplementation is generally not required.
We've got to have the hard science behind products that we recommend. And unfortunately, there are a lot of products out on the market today that do not have the science that they need. Protandim has the science that you can depend on.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
What I should do is go through ceremony. I should talk to the elders and talk to people firsthand and get the story that way. So my approach to all this was very radical because I wasn't coming from that Judeo-Christian European background. I was coming from Ketua elders that were telling me about things in the mountains of Carolina, about caves, about plates, about writings, about knowledge that they had that they had brought here. You know, I was being shown things by Mayan elders that didn't make any sense at all. I mean, sculptures of bearded guys with it almost looked like a sack hat, like the kind of thing you'd see a French fur trapper wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I look and I go, well, who are these people? And they would go, well, they're Cherokees. And I go, what? And they would go, yeah, they're Cherokees that came down here. There was a lot of commerce, and Cherokees originally came from the land of the sun, and they were seamen. I said seamen, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You mean, well, like the Basque, they knew how to navigate. They said, yeah, the Cherokees have always had a knowledge of the stars and the heavens. And they're very closely related in knowledge to the Mayan. And there was a lot of back and forth exchange between them. You know, like years ago, if you go back to the Miami Circle, which nobody ever got the real story. The real story was covered up before it even hit the press. Everything was sanitized. But, I mean, I have artifacts, and I have pictures on my website of artifacts that came from there that were like of a carved lion's tooth with Celtic symbols on it, with futhark or what you call Viking letters on them. And this is a lion's tooth. Well, you know, give me a break. The Quest Indians didn't have that. They were Aboriginal people that ran around, ate bugs, and ate clams that were on the shore. They were not architects. They were not mathematicians. They didn't possibly have a connection to the mathematics of what happened down there in that circle and how that was constructed, which has identical architectural mathematics in Bimini off Bermuda. That was discovered in the 60s, for crying out loud, by Dr. David Saint.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he wrote a book called The Stone Speak, The Sacred Stone Speak. And he had found the Bimini Road down there off Bermuda way back in the 60s, and God knows he suffered all sorts of criticisms because he was coming up against the fold of what everyone said. And the other thing I think which has to be taken into account is that the European mindset never took the seriousness and the authenticity of our oral tradition. And the oral tradition was actually set up so that things would not get twisted over time. If we go all the way back into it, the oral traditions were spoken in the original tongue. And when we go to like the Algonquin people, they had over 10,000 enunciations of words. Each different nuance meant it was a male, it was a female, it was a warrior, it was what, how it was said. And each person in the tribe that was the storyteller, the storykeeper, the daykeeper, had a different part of it. They were essentially living books. And the word could not be altered over time because it wouldn't fit. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
You had a language that was a very specific language that was based on verbs, not nouns. And it was also based upon mathematics. The ancient languages were very much so based on mathematics, which is why as we get into a lot of the decipherment of the ancient archaic tongues, we can't figure out what they say and we cannot decipher them because they come come from a whole different perception, and you would be better off trying to relate it to music, because mathematically, music has notes, and their language has notes, they have specific sounds. So as they said different things with the different tones, different harmonics would happen. And it would open up not only portals or sepulchres, but it would also open up portions of the mind, because the tone opens it up into the memory. And this is the way that the old ones here, you know, before the conquest, this is how they communicated for thousands and thousands of years. It's like, you know, how long did we live under the false premise that all civilization began 5,000 years ago? And yet, today, we know that that's not a reality at all. I mean, we've got things here that are 10,000, 15,000, 8,000 years old in America that couldn't possibly be here. We have Roman plates. We have Egyptian sculptures. We have Phoenician writings. We have things that couldn't possibly have been here according to that old paradigm.
Well, the Cherokee, we had plates. We had an ark that was guarded 24 hours a day. And
like the Mayans, Cherokees were one of the civilized tribes. They taught the barbarians from Europe how to live civilized. Because these people had no idea, no concept of freedom and self-government. They had none. They came from many, many generations of servitude and enslavement to feudal systems. They literally did not know how to govern themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not going to get into that whole thing, but it's like, you know, the Constitution of the United States is a Haudenosaunee Algonquin document.
That's right. Except
the reason why it didn't work,
they left out the women.
They left out the women, and they left out the equality of all these different bodies talking with each other and having commonality.
They left out the women, and they left in the slaves.
Yeah, because that made sense to them. And they didn't want the young women to have political power. And yet everything that the older that I seem to go back with these civilizations, well, they were basically matriarchies. And one of the things that you'll find, if you go through a lot of the documents and even some of the pictures I have up on my website about different things, is there's many, many references to the goddess. There's many, many references to the feminine. And personally, I started to get it as to why they were so passionate about silencing these things up. I mean, I'm not the only one, and you know it because you know some of us in the circle. I'm not the only one who's come across with these things. And you can't come across these things unless you're into a network. And one person knows another person that knows another one that knows an elder here that knows an elder down there that knows an elder down in South America. And you get to see all the pieces put together.
And it's almost impossible to break into the network because of, well, you know, some people, they don't trust you. They won't trust you for years and years and years. And I'll tell you, after what I've been through, Robert, I can understand why I was offended, you know, years ago when, a certain guy said, well, you know, I don't trust you. You know, that kind of puts you off because you know you're trustworthy, but they don't. They got to watch you for years. This information doesn't. The information did not come easily to you. The elders trusted you. I mean, everybody out there on the internet that slanders you says you shouldn't be trusted, but the elders trust you, and you know that's the proof of the pudding.
Yeah, well, it's a very old relationship now. I'm the old man on the mountain now. That's all that ever mattered to me. All that ever mattered to me is I could go wherever I had to go and sit down with the elders in almost almost any circle that I have to be in. And the doors are always open, they're still open. People on the internet, for the most part, they don't know from whence they come. And they build little worlds over things that don't even exist. And you don't know where somebody's coming from when they do something on the internet. They create a whole fantasy world. And the questions are always, well, who are you? Where are you coming from? These are the things that elders always ask me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, back in the old days, when you had to go to grandfather's house for like a year and a half, and every time you went up there, sometimes he talked to you, sometimes he wouldn't talk to you. And most of the time you chopped wood, you shoveled horse shit, or fixed his car. And you never complained. You never said the guy was a mean old guy. You never called him names. Because that's what it was. And over the years, he got to know you. He got to know what could trigger you. He got to know, you know, when you went by a place and you found something, did you pick it up and look at it and put it back? Or did you pick it up and try to sneak it and put it in your pocket? And these are all things that they watch, and I know that you're aware of this.
Well, and then, too, they have to see, spirit doesn't give out information easily either. Spirit doesn't do its thinking for you. And if a person's going to, an elder is going to watch you for a while, then they're going to ask questions of themselves. And sometimes they'll ask spirit questions, you know. And so it takes a while to get to know what you think you know about somebody. Then you go to spirit, and spirit can really help you understand somebody a lot more.
Yes. And the initiations never stop. You just get to deeper levels of it. And it's totally understandable, because we're dealing with technologies, a knowledge that is tens of thousands of years old, that has been carried down, you know, from generation to generation. When we talk about, you know, when everyone started to become, in the 60s and the 70s, familiar with Native Americanism, and, you know, everybody wanted to go out and get moccasins and beat drums and run away, and, you know, it was a very romantic thing. But it was hard, and you just didn't get in. And nobody had any idea, again, because of the gap of understanding and sharing of actual information of what had transpired for seven generations that made people so hostile, that made them so angry. You know, in America, we all had cars and TV, and we were watching things and listening to, you know, American Bandstand and people on the radio, you know, with submarine race watchers, Bill Haley and the Comets and Elvis Presley, you know. Not realizing that half those people were Mente people. How do you like that? Elvis Presley, king of rock and roll, the greatest of the great, the king of all of them. He was in Cherokee.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim superchargers your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Yeah, he was a Cherokee descendant.
Yeah, and that was all part of his charm. But, you know, these were things that were unspoken. In my elder's time, if you had Native American roots, you didn't talk about it. You changed your name to Smith or Billy or whoever the local prominent guy was in town. You know, you changed the name. You hid everything. So we go back in time and we have all these broken links. We have all these people with an incomplete history of where they came from. And I can't tell you how many thousands, and I mean thousands, have come up to me over the years. And that chain's been broken. And so they don't know where they stand. And, you know, it's a deep tragedy. It's an emotional thing that we are now in the 21st century coming through the other side of it simply because of, and this may be totally conjecture on my part, but I know a lot of elders that will tell you the same story. Years and years and generations ago, they knew that everything was connected to the bloodlines. And that if they kept the bloodlines healthy, and they kept them open rather than line breeding, and they bred out, and they brought new blood in, and they kept the bloodline going, what would happen is that when the time came, in the future of the big shift, the big change, the emergence, the fifth solar year, and other people call it the sixth solar year, so it depends on who you're going to. I ride with the Mayans. The Hopi, so to me, is going into the fifth age now. But that there would be a paradigm shift. And in this paradigm shift, the physics of everything would change, and we would start to awaken. And that is starting to happen now, and it's part of what's creating the chaos in this time. We have a lot of chaos right now, all over the world, on every level, in every structure that we ever set up, socially, religiously, economically, politically, just as it was predicted. How many years ago? How many generations ago? Well, did we find out the stories? Because, you know, our generation had the time, or at least my generation had the time, because you're only a baby. But my generation had the time to sit down and talk to these elders who aren't here anymore. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly.
Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging, and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
They were the ones who were the bridge between the old way, when they got up every day and they did their ceremonies every day, and their way of life was not totally destroyed. I remember in 1994, in a television interview on NBC, they asked me, I was doing a ceremony in Arizona with, there was a lot of people there, Hopis and Apaches, Kiowas, and they said, well, what do you see happening? Goes Wolf. And I said, what I see happening is that it, just like what happened to the native people here in less than one generation, their entire world was gone. And what you're going to see right now is that in less than one generation, the entire reality that you know will no longer be the same. And you're going to go to the native people to help you cope with it, because they've already coped with it. You won't know what it is. Because they think they're immortal. They think that their way of life is never going to end. They think that they're the greatest technological civilization that ever lived, and anything but that is the truth. You know, the ancient ones here had knowledge that they still can't figure out. And nobody's going to tell me that they took clamshells and little flintstones and carved these rocks to such precision when they built their structures that you can't even put a piece of tissue paper between them.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they still can't do that. And show me the engineering company that can build duplicated pyramids.
Nothing. There isn't anything today that can
and
do that.
How did they get water to go uphill? The old ones here did it. You go through Arizona, you go to the Havasupai area, and you can see where they moved the water from the creeks up the hill to where the village was. How'd they do that? So, and as we get more and more into this stuff, we find out that, well, there's nothing new about, you know, UFOs. There's nothing new. As a matter of fact, UFOs, we really don't know anything about them today, because back then, everybody knew about them. Here's the schematics. Here's Quetzalcoatl. Here's Kukulkan. They're flying in their machines. And it was common knowledge. If you go to some of the codexes, the ancient Mayan codices, there's whole stories there about that part of our knowledge, our science, and our life. And so, the civilization that we have today is technically ignorant. It relies upon mechanized machinery. It doesn't rely upon human intelligence. And the intelligence of not only understanding how a machine works, but understanding how the spirit world works. How the other paradigm, how the other dimension works in conjunction with this. The elders here understood all of that on an everyday basis. It was common knowledge.
So they were, now, from what I've been able to gather, the Anunnaki, their main headquarters was set up over there in what's now Iraq, but there was also a little colony over here. And so one of those guys was...
you would understand that when you're using the term Anunnaki, you're using their expression. Just so that we know that. In other words, Anunnaki are reptilian, genetically rooted people, right? As far as our explanations go today.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hybrids, okay? Anunnakis were not Nephilim, okay? Anunnakis were part human and part something else. They were a hybrid race. And they intermingled with the ancient father races here. And if we go back here, see, the amazing thing about the Western Hemisphere is that regardless of what happened, regardless of the destruction, regardless of the conquest, and the conquistadors were, they were despicable. I mean, anything that happens today that's horrible in Iraq or Iraq, they outdid, okay? As far as destruction and devastation and total genocide over here, including with the blessing of the Church of Rome, I might say, because that was all blessed by the papal bulls. History doesn't lie, it's over.
And yeah, kill them all, God will sort them out.
By the thousands. They came in by the thousands and wiped them out. Because they didn't want to hear something. Which was, never mind the goddess part, just the other part of it. The other part that they didn't want to hear was that Jesus, Yah, Yeshua, Yeshua, was here. The
prophet
was here. So when they came with their books, they said, this is a really interesting thing that you have, because this talks about our prophet. And, you know, the drama here is just an extended story of what happened. And, yeah, I mean, I still get a lot of stones thrown at me because when you're asking people to stretch beyond what they've been told, and that's the case, what they've been told, not what they found out, beyond what they've been told in dogmatic teaching, is that, you know, this whole existence of this one divine entity existed right here in this three-year period, and everything has been written, and everything's been done, and every war that ever happened over a three-year period, and yet the very words that were said, which we now know on a lot of occasions were altered and edited, he told them point blank, you know, there are many mansions in my father's house, there are other sheep that I must go to and gather them, and I'm not doing the Christian preaching thing. I am a Christian minister, but I'm not doing that. I'm talking straight historical fact. And the writings about this person, which is another thing. When I grew up, I was always told, look at the rock art. I go, rock art. And I look at it, you know, and isn't it amazing that they were here for how many, 300 years, 400 years? If they were Spanish, they were here for 400 years or something. And they looked at the stuff, and they never, in 400 years, learned what they were looking at. They were looking at notes, at writings, at combinations of different languages, all over the place, and our universities, our temples, were built in the woods. They were built in the mountains. They were built in the cathedral of the earth. They were not built in a building. And so they were places because, you know, we're just finding out about ley lines and power grids and the feasibility of Tesla technology, which was done back when. You've had someone on your show, Ron Pastore, who does a lot of work with that stuff. All of these cities, all of these settlements, they were all built on grid lines. One connected to another, and it's how energy moved. And we understood the earth then. We don't understand anything now except that the computer just locked up.
Well, the first time ley lines were mentioned was in a book that was written in 1853 called The Traditions of Dekuda. And the lines were revealed by Dekuda, who was the last prophet of the Elk Nation. They were Algonquin-speaking people. but the concept was revealed to William Pigeon. And Pigeon was surveying the mounds area, and you know, his book was in fashion for a while, and then for a long time, you know, it was, you know, decried and laughed at. But I think it's going to make a comeback. His book is now going to enter the that final phase where truth is finally recognized for what it is.
You know, the whole thing is here that the truth will set us free. And the elders have been telling us the truth from the beginning. They have no reason not to. They've never had a reason not to. Things change, presidents come, wars come, television shows change, music changes, but they're still telling us the same things. You know, when the Hopi would always say to me, you know, we have to go back, and when Messiah comes, when the Blue Star Kachina comes, they're coming to observe us. They're coming to see who remembers the original teachings. And I used to walk around and go, what's the original teachings? You know, and back in the days when I was learning, I used to think that there was a special Indian school, and all elders went there, and they were taught how to tell you things in riddles. You were never told anything straight out. You were always told a riddle. You know, everything was always J.R. Tolkien. You know, well, go here, Frodo, and find this piece, and you'll know where the next thing is. And it's like, okay, why don't you just tell me a story? You know, and I understand that now, because that in teaching us in that way, they forced us. In the first place, it was a natural filtration system. Because if you didn't have the stick-to-itiveness, if you didn't stay with it, you wouldn't get it. And you had to go beyond this paradigm and this way of thinking to a place where you didn't know which was north and which was south, and what was right and what was wrong, and you were so far into a state of confusion, so to speak, that you were in a state of openness. And in the openness, we'd find out.
Well, how long have the Christians had their Bible?
Which Bible?
400 or 500 years now. The Gutenberg.
It was the Gutenberg Bible, is a King James Bible. And all the way back to Rome when they decided to put the Bible together, because the Roman emperors decided that, well, you know, we can't do anything about this new Christian movement here, which wasn't called the Christian movement. It was first dubbed Christian in a place called Antioch by the Roman emperor. And it was sort of a colloquial phrase, because they believed in a Christ. So they came up with a phraseology called Christian. But before then, they were considered Essenes.
Well, the reason why I ask the question is, you know, you were talking about how they teach in basically in parables.
Today, basically, all go back to a time around the 1500s.
Okay.
Between the 1500s and the 1600s. In the 1600s, we came out with the King James Bible, which put the texts, the teachings of the Bible, into common vernacular.
Right. So it's been, you know,
before then, it was only in Latin.
It's been 350, 400 years
Yeah.
that people that call themselves followers of Christ have had the Bible.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
But why? How is it then that these people? Well, there's a few movements that call themselves Christian that actually teach the way of life that Christ taught, which was all things common. Amish people, Hutterites, the Mormons tried it for a while and couldn't hack it. And 2 years before he died in 1875, Brigham Young said that the Mormons could have redeemed Zion. And I'm not talking about Zionism, but they could have had, they could have set up their all things common system and been under divine protection within 2 years of their arrival in the Salt Lake Valley. So by, 1849, they could have been divinely protected and fed. But that he said you didn't want it. He says you were too busy with your farms and your businesses. And now we still have people like Edgar Casey that are saying that the kind of communism that Jesus taught is the correct way of life. And the Urantia book talks about how someday this idea of living all things common, which is far from communism, will catch on and will spread over the entire face of the earth. And like I say, people call themselves Christians and they call themselves followers of Christ, and they didn't even recognize Christ's teachings when they saw them. When they got over here to the Americas and they saw what the Indians had, they resented it and they killed them for it.
Well, they were greatly intimidated by a truth that they couldn't deal with.
Yeah, well, that's not to say the Indians had it perfect either, because, they were warring over here too. Now, there's...
They had their problems with each other.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if they weren't warring with each other, they never would have been defeated. They couldn't have been defeated. They were, as far as a warrior goes, okay, they were superior on an individual basis. But, I don't care how good you are on a horse, what can you do against Gatling guns?
Yeah.
Okay. What can you do against bio warfare?
Yeah.
What can you do when they give you smallpox blankets and it wipes out? I mean, before the first shot was fired, the indigenous people lost over 30 million people to disease.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that the Hopi prophecy and teachings are really clear that the white man was sent here to learn something from the red man and vice versa. And the red man knew the white man was coming. They even knew there would be different waves of white men. They would be able to tell them apart by the kind of hats that they wore.
Right.
And when it finally came down to when they brought the cross, the Hopi knew that when they saw the lopsided cross that had one leg longer than the other, that there was going to be trouble. Because they were told that if the people came carrying a cross more like the Celtic cross, which is the cross like you see in the old, in Britain, a lot of waymarkers and even some ancient graves, I guess, have
which is more likened to an ankh than a cross.
Right.
It's like a cross over an ankh.
An equilateral cross. They knew that if the people carried that more like a Celtic cross, that they would be more balanced in their outlook. And they were even told that the people that finally did come and settle around them, which ended up being Mormons, would be kind people, but that they still caused problems for them. And it's all been the truth. It's all been fulfilled.
We have a million stories to tell. I'm just one of a million or more stories that can be told.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
For example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right. So where do you get the energy? Seriously, I mean, look at you.
Well,
we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old. And they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have to be on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters, and we get along great. 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah. But I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's difficult because we're both type A, and you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Yeah, but isn't it tragic how such a small deviation from a basic principle can cause all that pain and confusion as time goes on? Because what you're saying,
well, the more
did not accept and embrace living in commonality, you know, and I'm not going to go into the fact that, like the Constitution, everything that the Mormons built everything on came from Joseph John Mormon, and John Mormon was an Indian. He was an Algonquin Indian. Okay. He gave the information to Joseph Smith. He opened the doorways to the ancient caves. He opened the whole passageway back to history. Again, it was given by a Native American. And as we go through that whole mythology, everything was about, yes, there's a lot of Christ in America. Well, they got that from the Native people. And they talk about the Paradise Land, which they feel is in South America, which probably was. It was probably a Paradise Land. I mean, when I talked to the Mayan elders about what was it like, and I was raised in the North Shore of Long Island as a small child in upstate New York, okay? So coming from New York, I always ask bold questions. Like, how come you didn't have a wheel? I mean, you built these things that are so amazing. You can calculate down to, you know, almost within 16 inches on Mars where something is sitting, and you did that back then without the Hubble telescope. How come you didn't have a wheel? And they said, well, we had a wheel. But you know what? The wheels, and there are Mayan toys that have wheels, okay? And I said, well, okay, so if you had the wheel, why didn't you have chariots? And I remember Humboldt's man saying to me, we didn't need them. I said, what do you mean you didn't need them? And he spoke about whenever you were inside a major city, let's say, which they weren't places, like when people go today and they go to Chichen Itza and they go to Uxmal and they go to Palenque, those were not cities. Those were universities. The cities were outside the universities, okay? Where the people lived, where they did their everyday stuff, where they got rid of their excrement and their trash, was never inside those areas. So what does that tell you? Okay, besides the fact that it's always curious that they never had any prisons.
That they're sacred areas.
And right, and inside these, I'm going to call them universities because that's what they were, inside these sacred areas, okay, the streets used to be caged. I said, what do you mean caged? Well, they would make nets. And they would have all these flora in them. And they would have all of these birds. And you would move through these streets, and you, I said, okay, I said, wait a minute. I said, what you're telling me, I said, let me get this right. What you're telling me is that basically you guys almost levitated. Is that what you're saying? Is that how you got from Chichen Itza to the Serpent Mound in Ohio on the Mayan Road? And we know that that road exists, right? Because we've seen all these, I mean, it's as big as the I-90 or I-70. I mean, it's that wide. And it goes all the way up to Ohio. Giant stones, perfectly put in place. Why were they put there? And he said yes. And so, as we get into it, again, here's another example of a technology that we once knew, that we were once connected with, and that's why I call us gods in amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
We are gods in amnesia who no longer know where we came from. No longer know our potentiality, and this is what we're waking up to. We're waking up to this, and a lot of this stuff that's happening is definitely not New Age, because New Age burns out in 6 weeks. We're going back into the old ways. We're remembering the old ways, the Mayan stories about how they sent their solar priests into the future for this time, and they call this time the time of the initiation. The Hopis call this the time of the purification. The Mayans refer to this basically as the time of initiation if we're speaking about what we're going through, okay? They also speak of it as the time of the emergence, because we emerge in this catatonic state to an awareness that enables us to access the higher level of understanding. And I think the simplest way to understand that is that my grandfathers would have never understood half the things that you and I talk about on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
They would just sit there and go, uh-huh, okay.
Oh, you're crazy. Well, it's like when I interviewed Chakosh, she was telling me that when John Lanza took her down and showed her Prophecy Rock and showed her some of the other things around that area, we're going back 35 years here, you know, to the early and mid-60s. Even, I guess it's even further back, 35 years, 40 years ago. Uh-huh. And she said that that John, who was an old man, his brother Mike was chief of Arrivee, and she noticed that you can't walk anywhere Hopi. You know, there's a lot of rocks and small stones, and, you know, it's always, ooh, ow, ow, ooh, you know, and your shoulders are reacting, you know, because your feet are hurting, and she noticed that. Well, she noticed that John wasn't having any problems. His shoulders weren't moving when he was walking, and she looked down, and he was walking, gliding about a half an inch off the ground. Uh huh.
Yeah, I believe that.
I wonder if they could do that with their carts and their horses. You know, maybe that's why they didn't need wheels. They just built sled.
Well, it's pretty amazing when you realize how many thousands of miles that the roads went up. They were constructed during the time of the Toltec Mayan. They were constructed during the time of Quetzalcoatl. And those timelines get confused. When our modern academians try to analyze it, because if you just take the basic timeline, Quetzalcoatl lived for 800 years. And they go, well, how could he have lived for 800 years? Well, if you're looking at him as a human, like the rest of us, maybe there was a problem and he couldn't have done it, but our ancestors lived that long, didn't they? I mean, if you go to the Bible, it says that Abraham was 600 years old when he had his son. Okay? So our ancestors lived that long. But if we go to the Native American story about Kosikoto, the Pale Prophet, well, then that would mean that he was Yeshua Sananda, which would mean Sananda, which was the Tibetan terminology of the name that he took, meaning the ascended one, okay, the one who had ascended. And if he came here, well, then that would mean he was immortal, so why wouldn't he be 800 years old? Isn't that what it says right there?
Right.
It's like, this is why people don't like me sometimes, Will. Because I ask logical questions.
Well, you confuse them with the truth.
Well, if the guy, this little Aramaic guy who was fairly dark-skinned, he wasn't a Nordic blonde, came out of the tomb and he arose and he ascended, how could that possibly be the end of the story? Then he just disappeared. He just vanished. It makes no sense. See?
Well,
it makes no sense. Something happened after that. And he told them what happened.
Well, yeah, he told them, and there is an account in the Book of Mormon. See, the people that kept the records that were translated and eventually became the Book of Mormon, which is not to be confused with the Book of Mormon that people have in their hands today. There are a few people who have the original that it doesn't have 10,000 changes in it. But there is an account. Number one, they were told that they would know that when their God had been crucified, that there would be 3 days and nights of darkness, which is something that is prophesied to happen again in the future. And when this period of time came over here in this hemisphere, there were no fires. You couldn't see anything. It was a time of sheer terror. And they said there were great earthquakes. And they said that all of a sudden that there was a light that appeared in the sky, and it got brighter and brighter and brighter. And as the light got closer, they said they could see that it was a man. And that he arrived and touched down in their city, which was in ruins, and let the children come forward and taught them and healed them, and the Cherokee speak during the same time period when a man walked across water and redirected I believe it was a water spout away from them, and otherwise people would have been killed.
Which is why he was called the God of the Wind
and Water. Yeah, the God of Wind and Water. And they asked him, well, what should we call you? And he said, I don't care. They're calling the God of Wind and Water. And then, people, and then Cherokees today laugh. 99% of them just laugh you to derision when you bring this up, because they don't know their own culture. They don't know their own history. They've been Christianized. They have become so accepted, in this culture that they're now part of the same problem. And we get people on like Clifford Alford, who is an Ottawahi, who has been taught, what her history was. And you get people accusing him of this and that and the other. The worst thing you can accuse somebody of is that he's running sweats and letting people come in nude, which is a lie, but that's one person's accusing. And all it takes is one person to accuse you of that, and all of a sudden it's the truth.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is... I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put them on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and, in fact, has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase 1 detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Yeah, well, the most recent thing on the net about me is now I'm a sex criminal, you know. And actually what's happened is this guy that's been after me for a few years, he's got me confused with somebody I used to know, but that doesn't matter to him because he just folded us into the same person, you know. And it's just crazy. But these accounts, you know, they're in the Book of Mormon, and, you know, lots of people join, you know, the churches that are associated with the Book of Mormon, but just like any truth, you know, people are, you know, Joseph Smith was human, and he made some mistakes, and, you know, God kept telling him, hey, if you don't quit listening to these men, the church is going to go into condemnation and you're going to fall. And he wouldn't stop listening, and he got involved with
spirituality.
Yeah, he got involved with some different teachings, and
that's why I don't like churches, because churches sacrifice spirituality for the sake of the politics.
And
God doesn't compromise.
Well, if you read it originally, see original Book of Mormon makes it very, very clear there's only one God. But, you know, the Mormons, you know, out west, they still can talk about the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, and there's been so many changes that have been made, it's absolutely unrecognizable. You know, when I start talking with old Mormon friends about these things, and they say, oh, you're crazy and you're an apostate, and I just ask them one question. I say, if the Book of Mormon is supposed to be the fullness of the gospel, then why is your church's priesthood organization completely different than what's in the Book of Mormon? Why aren't you living all things common, which is what the Book of Mormon says you're supposed to do? And then they start blustering, you know, and then I point out to them, and I said, look, I said, these teachings were given to white people for a brief period of time, and in Book of Mormon, it's very clear that the teachings will be given to them to see what they would do with them. And it also says that, you know, if they didn't do well with them, it said that a time would come when they would be burned. It refers to them as Gentiles, and Joseph Smith did say the church was identified with the Gentiles, but the Book of Mormon says that they came from what's known as the small plates, and there's another you know, larger group of plates that was never revealed that has much, much, much more information. But the prophecy in the Book of Mormon is that the Gentile peoples will be burned, and after that, that all that information that wasn't revealed will be revealed to whoever is living after the burning of the Gentiles. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, if we're looking at a worldwide nuclear war and some other things, I'm saying, well, that'll be fun. You know, it's going to be really interesting for the people that survive, because they're going to be privy to a lot of information that's going to be revealed. You know, possibly, I mean, who knows what's going to be revealed?
Well, I think that that's why it's so important right now, for a lot of these truths to come out. There are horrific things that are going to happen. And there are climatic earth changes that are going to occur. And there are those that come from beyond the sun that are already here and that are going to be coming more frequently. The last of the thunder prophecies has everything to do with what we would term extraterrestrial, but it's really got to do with our ancestors, the way it was taught. Chief Dan Evamaya, oldest Hopi. It wasn't until after his passing in 1999 that the prophecies relating to that, I was allowed to bring them out. And I published them, along with another woman, Catherine Cheshire, who were both confident of Dan. And well, we knew about those things for a decade. But the world wasn't ready for them. They weren't ready for them now.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hello, Life Vantage. I'm Donnie Osmond. You know, with my hectic schedule doing the Donnie and Marie show at the Flamingo in Las Vegas, all of the television appearances I do, my daily radio show, touring across the country doing concerts, being a father, a husband, a grandfather. Yes, I'm a grandfather three times. It keeps me very, very busy, as you can only imagine.
Here we go. Go away, little girl.
I'll always be grateful that I was introduced to Protandim, and that my doctor, Dr. Daniel Royal, studied it. He ran tests, verified it yet again on me that Protandim does exactly what it's supposed to do. Thanks to Protandim, I know that I'm doing all I can do to fight the effects of aging and oxidative stress from the inside, and doing it naturally, helping my genes do exactly what they're already programmed to do.
I cry each night, my tears, I feel like a teenager again.
It's been quite a ride, and promises to be even more in the future and years to come. So congratulations, Life Vantage and Protandim. I think it's fantastic.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And they weren't even ready for them. It became a sensationalistic thing when they first came out. But even now, our perception of Starseed is morphing. It's changing. So I think that what we have to do now is feed people's faith. We have to feed people's faith and take away the poison. The poison is the manipulation of the position of the teachings, and the teachings of Yeshua were all about living in commonality. Absolutely. Because there was no other way to be. The elders would tell me when I was a young grasshopper, they would say, you know, you're born as a two-legged, but that doesn't mean that you're born human. You have to earn the right to be human. You have to earn the right to be accepted by human beings. And you have to find your place in the society and contribute to the account of man. And then you're embraced into the human. And you know, it reminds me, remember the old story, the old movie, Little Big Man?
Mm-hmm.
And Chief Dan George is telling him wisdoms, you know. And he's going, well, there weren't always a lot of human beings. These others, these Washichu, they're the soulless ones. They're the ones who don't know who their mother is. And, you know, that's basically what we're dealing with in today's world. We're dealing with people who think, like capricious children, that they can get away with anything. They can just act as they feel like acting, have capricious sex, do what they want, take drugs, steal, lie, cheat, walk away from the sacred ways that have been here for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years, and just go, you know, well, we don't have to do that. And we now live in a society that is totally diseased. It's totally diseased. There's almost no place that you go, and everybody's hiding their heads and hanging their heads that where we go, there's no hope. The children are committing suicide. You know, they don't publicize that, but I'm connected to the World Natural Health Organization, and it's up on my website. People can go there, and we study a lot of these things about what's happening and the fact that how come greater than 50% of Native American children between the ages of 12 and 18 living on reservations from Canada down to Texas, how come there's such a high suicide rate? But we don't want to deal with those things, right? And yet we have to. How come so many women, more than women, how come so many men are being born sterile? So we're seeing the prophecies playing out. And I don't look at it as, you know, God's my enemy and God's punishing me and I was born to this earth disturbing purgatory. I believe that this is paradise and we screwed it up.
Yeah, this is just consequences of our own actions.
And it's a stage that we are supposed to go through, just like the caterpillar becomes the butterfly.
Well, you know, people wonder how the Hopi came up with all this stuff, but you know, they've been through this, you know, four times before, so they're just telling the stories over and over. Yeah, they're just telling the stories over and over again. You know, they know how it all works. It's been a cycle now, and you know, it's all happened before. It's just happening again.
Well, there's a lot of pictures on my website to talk that if you want to go there. At www.robertghostwolf.com, or they can go to wolflodge1word.org, and there's a section there called Stargate Files.
Mm-hmm.
And in Stargate Files, there are all real pictures. Some of them even include me. I sent you some with these artifacts and with these giants. That let everybody know that, you know, legend becomes fact. Legend becomes fact. And I think that that's part of the legends of Aslan. The legends of Aslan have to do with my journey from speaking with and these manuscripts and going around trying to find these halls of record and meeting all sorts of people. I mean, talk about Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in this incredible melodrama, but we found these beings from Bolivia all the way into Canada. Tall beings with tall, elongated skulls. Women between 8 and 9
tall, usually men between 9 and 14 feet tall. They were beings that had swords. They had armor. They had dragons on their armor breastplates. They wore crowns. They had multiple ways of writing. In other words, the libraries were in fact actually libraries. They had brass plates, copper plates, gold plates, silver plates, lead plates. Some of them were square. Some of them are hooked together with little rings. Others are round, like they look almost donut shaped, okay? With all such, and they've been forensically tested, where they are literally well over 2500 BC. That's the way they officially put it down on paper. And the writings talk about journeys to the stars. They talk about metaphysics. There are depictions of horses. There are depictions of elephants. There are depictions of great ships with masts. There are depictions of ships that look like what we would call giant arcs. They were like barges that they would bring things over. I have found writings in Chinese, ancient Chinese. And you know, when you look at these things, you have to understand what it is you're looking at, because it may be Chinese or it may be Hebrew, but it may come from a totally wrong period. It's like, you know, when you look at a very lot of what comes out of the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's the wrong Hebrew. It's not the Hebrew that would have been written thousands of years before. It was the Hebrew that would have been written from the time of the Crusades on. So that leaves us to wonder, right? I mean, sorry guys, it's the wrong alphabet. But the thing's here. This is the amazing thing about the Americas. Despite the devastation, despite all the destruction, despite total destruction, and campaigns of genocide and that happened in North and South America over the last 500 years, most of what was salvaged, and they were told again, thousands of years before this time, to take your sacred writings and hide them in the hills, bring them in the mountains, because the younger brother is going to come with great destruction, and nothing will be left, and there will be a time you will need these things, and they will remind you that, you know, story, legend lives on forever, but the mind is something, the human is something that has to see things. When you see these things, when your children's children see these things, they will remember these times. The memory will be awakened. And this is what we're going through right now. And people don't want to bring this out into National Geographic magazine. Not because it won't pan out historically or forensically, but because it'll upset the paradigm. And it'll upset the business. Because the business of artifacts in this world is controlled by a very small handful of people. And they make their money off Egyptian artifacts and what they're worth. Daniel Brinkley brought some of my stones that I found here in the desert. He brought them over to Egypt. He showed them to Zahi Hawass, who's the head of the Giza Plateau, and the guy who walks around with all of the discoveries of the ancient tombs that he did before he got in there. You know, he's kind of funny. But he got in there, and the first thing he accused Daniel of was, where were they stolen from? These were Egyptian. And Daniel says, well, they were stolen from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have an answer for it. They just went into complete automatic denial. I mean, everything about them went into total denial. And it was like, you know, they couldn't possibly have existed here. And yet, these things are, it's not like they're in one place, you know, and it's not like, you know, somebody came over here with some huge trading caravan and put all this stuff in this place. They're everywhere. And what we're finding out is that they're in more and more and more commonality everywhere. They're in Canada, they're in Bolivia, they're in Colorado, they're in Utah, they're in Arizona, they're in Mexico, they're in Chile, they're in Colombia. And
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
We're opening up to that. In my opinion, the elders have been trying to guide us wayward children for many, many generations now into the right memory, hoping that we would wake up before we destroyed everything. Maybe there was some covenant that they decided to let the wayward children develop on their own without any repercussions. You know, the Hopis raised their children without any law. You're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, they can run wild and run free because this may be the last generation. So they don't grow up in the other world. And the other thing is, you know, like you were talking earlier about things on the internet and people saying nasty things about you and anybody who's out there doing anything. And the fact of the matter is, most people don't have a clue. They don't have any idea of how things work. They don't realize that there are societies here that exist off rules, etiquette, and conduct that go back thousands of years. And that a lot of these things that they're accusing people of, these people would not be alive if they did these things.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know because they think everything's Silicon Valley. Everything's, air-conditioned cars and TV. And what do you mean if I turn on my sink, the water doesn't come out? Okay, you mean I got a hole in water? I got a sponge bathe? It's like, well, how do you think they got across? I mean, you think like, you know, when Jesus traveled the world and he stopped at Holiday Inns? And we lost a lot in that transition from realizing how much work it took everybody, every day, every minute to make life move smoothly, to allow life to have grace, to allow learning. We no longer put our emphasis on education, and maybe sometimes justifiably so, because the education that we got for so long, especially the last 300 years, was false. It was predicated and built upon lies. And so now, the purification that the Hopi speak of, or the initiation, as the Mayans refer to it, is that we're going through trial by fire. We're being burned up emotionally. Everything that we have that is a non-truth dissolves in front of our eyes, whether it's a relationship, whether it's our job position, whether it's our false status in the community, whether it's our false status as a pious religious preacher, preaching false documents and bending people's will to the way it is. I mean, if all of these things are being tested, all of these things were going through a trial by fire. And in the end of it, I see great hope for everybody, but going to have to stand tall, and we're going to have to stand firmly on the ground. You know, the Gonawita talked about in the end times, after the he did his prophecy, the three dragons, which everybody got confused and thought that the white dragon, the red dragon, and the black dragon had to do with race. And then, well, okay, how do we explain the black dragon? Well, the black dragon's got to be the UN guys, because they're all wearing black fatigues and stuff, but the UN wears blue, right?
I, to tell you the truth, I think the black, well, let's bring folks up to date on this. The prophecy was that white dragon would be here, or white serpent, and that the red dragon would come down across the pole and enter into a battle with the white dragon. Now, prior to this, the Indians would have been released, and
if the white dragon would come, and it would be crippled, and it would ask the Indian people to help it stand up on its feet. And
right.
The Indian people would help it, but then the white dragon would become increasingly more and more greedy. And it would take more and more and more without recourse.
Right.
And then it would become almost the enemy of the native people.
Right.
And then the red dragon would come.
But before the red dragon comes, the Indian people are released from their captivity, and they would go to the hilly country and burn tobacco and get to know each other then.
Right.
And then the attack would come. And they would have this great struggle, and then a black dragon or serpent would come out of the sea.
From the south.
From the south. Would enter into...
A white woman with these magical feathers. And it would ask her what was going on, and she would tell it the stories of all the devastation and the corruption. And it would become angry, and it would go and declare war on the Red Dragon, right?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging, and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And it's in my book, Last Cry.
and but once the Black Dragon came into the mix, it would stop.
Isn't it a Prophecy Keepers? You have a story of the Gonorrhea.
Yeah, yeah. The version that was taught by Mad Bear didn't have the woman in it, but it said once the black serpent entered into the battle, it would turn the battle in the favor of the. It would stop the battle. The Red Dragon would go back where it came from. The Black Dragon would go back into the sea and swim away and never be heard of again.
Right, but it also taught that the native people would become as dust upon the land, that many of them would not even remember
mm-hmm.
their way, and that in this coming together of people in commonality in the hilly country, people would start to remember and return to the ancient knowledge, the old ways. Remember that part?
Mm-hmm.
And that the black dragon would look, and it would totally destroy the Red Dragon. And it would bring devastation everywhere. And then it would turn toward the hilly country, and it would see these people, these new people, who had returned to the original ways. They would be standing with their hands across their chest, which was not a stance in our ancient ways of defiance. It was a stance of confidence, correct?
And Hunbach's men phrased that way. Not with folded arms, but our hands across chest.
Yeah, and that he would see these people standing tall and firmly upon the ground and rooted and grounded in their ways, and he would realize there was no contest here. He would turn. He would not attack them. That's all I remember the end of
this. I'm beginning to wonder if, since the we had, most people identified the Red Dragon with the communist countries, and because they have the color red, and the White Dragon with the European governments on this side, I'm beginning to wonder if the black, you know, I begin to wonder, you know, because the terrorism and Muslim, some of their holy men wear black, but their color is really green. I'm beginning to wonder if the Black Dragon aren't off the planet. Because they would be the only ones that would have the power to.
Because the black represent the void, space.
Okay. Yeah. Right. They would be the only ones that would have the power to intervene to stop the battle, and the only ones that would have the wisdom to see that those few that were in the hilly country, burning tobacco, probably shouldn't be messed with, because there wouldn't be any contest. Because if you're living all things common, even the Bible says you'll be divinely protected and you'll be fed like stall-fed calves. So, yeah, the possibilities are really kind of interesting here about who the Black Dragon is. You got me thinking.
Well, you know, we can go down, and there's a lot of the Aztec have a lot of red and blue dragons. The Mayans have white, red and black, and I've seen yellow and green. So dragons were very prevalent here in the old understanding. We find dragons even up here in North America, not to the extent that they was incorporated into the architecture like it was in Mesoamerica with the Inca and the Mayan, predominantly the Mayan and the Aztec. But the Azteca were very strange people.
My dragons, we might want to clarify that these were flying serpents.
Yeah, they were not reptilians. The world of David Icke. They were flying dragons with wings. And Kochi Karl himself is called a blue dragon. And I think that, you know, all of that artwork was encoded language. A lot of times when we look at, like, the Gateway of the Sun in Peru, and we look at depiction over the gateway of Viracocha. And Viracocha is, you'll notice that there's always two beings. There's one being within the other being. There's one being emerging out of the other being.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding of that for both Inca and Maya is that that had to do with a dual genetic. Okay? That there was a natural man, and then there was a created man. But that the natural man would always come through, and eventually, and it's not something that can be, you know, done in 5 minutes. You have to go through all these codes. It's 1,000 images and 20 years of reading them and understanding them. But the natural man would always come through. In the end, as we go through this time of emergence, which is what 2012 is all about. It's not about the end of the world. It's about emergence. It's one of the most hopeful prophecies that ever was. It had nothing to do with it. That's what all the academians put on it, because they don't understand the way that the knowledge works. When you're looking at a codex, very simply, you cannot look at one page of it, or you cannot look at one part of it. You have to look at the whole thing. You cannot just read one section. And a lot of people turn around and they understood one calendar, for instance, in the Mayan, and then they made a whole religion about the one calendar. And my kumbhas would say, well, what about the other 16? You see, you have to understand how it all works together, because their consciousness, their perception was totally holistic. It was spherical. How's that? It wasn't just a circle, it was a circle. They knew how things would come and how things would go and how things would affect and how things would come from above and how things would come from below. That's why whenever you do real ceremony, we say that for a reason, because there's a lot of people out there who like to do things with parlor tricks. You know, I've seen the little crystals inside the rattles inside the sweat lodge, you know. That's a big difference than when the guy moves his hand and you see this trail of blue light. You go, whoa! You know? And then you get up and the guy next to you in the lodge goes, who was the big guy sitting next to me? You go, there was nobody sitting next to you. But, you know, so the dragon is part of it. And there are dragons all over Southwest. There's dragons all over South America. I mean, there are giant dragons down in Peru and Bolivia.
A lot of people say that shortly before the whites got here, that was the last time we saw one.
That we saw a dragon?
Mm-hmm, the Cherokees.
Yeah, but they're in the earth.
Yeah, they are.
The earth. If you go up to Canada and you talk to Sushwap, and they know the difference between the rumblings of an earthquake and the rumblings of the dragons that are awakening. Because they believe that in this end time, that the dragons will awaken and return. It's like they have cycles, kind of.
Yeah.
And there are periods when they go and periods when they come. And I've always been absolutely amazed how in this particular time zone that we're in, the last 100 years or so, there's a lot of it that looks like it's dying and withering, you know, but it's like as we're going from one age to another, that's part of emergence. But we're seeing all of these things springing up seemingly sometimes almost out of nowhere. We're seeing this ancient knowledge coming up in full flourishing. It's totally there, out of nowhere. And nobody even knew about it 20 years ago. I think the dragons are still here.
Well, from what Rolling Thunder said, he said that there was a certain cave that you could go to in North Carolina, and you could go in and ask the serpent. You could be lucky. If you wanted to be a holy man, you could do that. And, you know, whatever it was that you wanted, your wish could be granted. And I got to thinking later on that, well, maybe that serpent he was asking, maybe that was a flying serpent that was in the cave.
Well, I remember RT having a lot of fault short temper. But I don't ever remember him lying. And sometimes his teachings were very harsh. And like he said, you're so stupid, I don't know how you're going to survive.
Yeah.
You're so dumb.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingraham, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
Well, it's like, you know, Well, the hippies that came to Meditante, because it took them about 2 years, and they became racist against their own race, and he says, go on home. He says, you're totally missing the point. Yeah, by the time I met him, he'd mellowed out quite a bit. He'd lost his leg, he definitely was a man of emotion.
Well, I remember he called me up at Christmas Eve, 1984. I remember because I was watching The Godfather, and it was in the middle of The Godfather, Godfather 3, and all of a sudden this real heavy feeling came into the house. I just knew something was up, because you could feel it. Anyway, we talked on the phone, and I don't know about mellowing, because at that conversation, what he wanted to do was me get a couple of helicopters, and he was going to fly out to Black Mountain and stop what was going on out there.
Well, a lot of people don't understand the real RT is Billy Jack, because Billy Jack was written around RT's life. You know, when you see Billy Jack, you see what RT was when he was a young man.
Yes. Well, like you said, a lot of people have no idea that the story of Billy Jack was based on him.
And folks, we're talking about Grandfather John.
I knew the real Billy Jack.
Yeah, John Rolling Thunder Pope. Pope is not a common Cherokee name, but it is a common Chickamauga Cherokee name. And his father and grandfather are both named Yank Killer. And RT grew up down in what's now Chickasaw Nation. And that's pretty common, too, because when the Chickamaugan Cherokees were ostracized and excluded from the roles on Tahlequah, but a lot of them married in or were hidden among the Muscogee people. Really, most of them stayed in Alabama. You know, a lot of them came to Missouri and Arkansas, but that area, the Kiamichi Mountains, where Rolling Thunder grew up, on the Oklahoma Arkansas border, in what's now Chickasaw Nation. That's the that you know what he's saying is true. You know, he was a Chickamauga Cherokee. I think he said he was a descendant or a relative of Sequoia, also, right?
Yes, that was part of his story.
Yeah.
I know one thing. There was only one Rolling Thunder. There'll never be another one.
Mm.
And the things that he did,
his own son and grandson, there was a lot of family dynamics that were going on, and his own family didn't even understand him. You know, there's that old saying, and where is it? It's in the Bible. You know, this is that a prophet is without honor in his own family. So they didn't even really. Yeah, they didn't understand him either. You know, my family didn't understand me. I'll tell you that. You know.
Well, prophets are wolf teachers. And wolf teachers go out away from the tribe. They go out into the wilderness, and they go to the unexplored regions. I mean, this legend has it. And they bring back to the tribe, because they are wolf, and wolf is very social conscious. Wolf originally gave us our social positions, taught us all about that. Taught us all about alpha and omega, and where people were in the circle, the social circles of the tribe. Not meaning just social and getting to meet people, but where the spiritual elders were. And if we go back to Algonquin ways, we had sachem. We had the grandmother circle, and then we had the warrior circle. And all three had to agree. It's like Hopi. When Hopis don't agree, they just don't show up. They just don't vote, and that means that it doesn't go. But the wolf teacher goes all the way out and brings back to the tribe so that the tribe may grow, so that the clan may grow, so that the knowledge may take them to the next level. And wolf teachers, you know, I remember a friend of mine said to me once, she was a very wise woman, and I was going through hard times, and people were throwing arrows at me and things in my back, and I was being accused of being places when I was 3,000 miles away. And she says, well, you know, grandfather gave you the name Wolf. He didn't give you the name Rabbit. I think that we're moving into a time where the wolf medicine is more and more predominant, because only the wolf medicine has the power to bring us through a failing paradigm. And it's a failing paradigm because it's time of usefulness, it's time for our experience, and what we can gather out of it is over. There's nothing more to learn out of what that was. We broke away from our spirituality. I mean, we used to have great temples and pyramids and sacred places and sacred waters. And now we have hotels and amusement parks and empty vids. So we have broken away from all of that, and we've lived in base and coarse vulgarity for many generations now. And the reason why people are so despaired, why they're so depressed, why they're so much hopelessness, is because without spirit, we can't live, because we're mainly spirit.
And stay tuned, we'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals which cause oxidative stress. Protandim has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandim reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandim reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing NRF2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
We're mostly spirit. And if we don't put that into our lives, if we don't walk with that in our lives, then there's no synchronicity. There's no harmony. There's no... You can't walk a half an inch above the ground if you're labored with thoughts of intellectual guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be that light. And I know what you're talking about when you make reference to that, because I've seen it. And some of those elders are that light. But, you know, you don't get there until you're an elder, right? After you realize that everything in this world isn't worth it, and the only thing that's really worth it is spirit, then all of a sudden, maybe, you start to walk that way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you live your life as one being instead of multiple beings, and always trying to cause them to integrate, because they can't, you know, it's like you're there's the you that's on the job, there's the you that goes to school, there's the you in your family, there's the you in the social circle, there's the you in the ceremony, there's the you that is you when you're on the go to town, there's the you when you talk on the telephone. All of these different parts of you, you try to integrate into a one you, and the spirit doesn't know how to do it, because most of them are illusion. So when we get to lock that way, when we unload the bundles that we no longer need, then maybe we can get that light again. You know, and that's part of age. That's part of age.
We're not
supposed to die with the rub. We're supposed to get lighter and smarter.
We're going to be given the opportunity soon to shed a lot of things. And it's just like the Chickamauga Ottawahees in this area say, you know, we're going to go back to the dirt again. And I don't know if I'm going to make it. I guess we'll just have to see. But I think if, you know, my mom had her favorite saying was, well, you know, if they ever send missiles over here with nukes, I hope they land right in my lap. But, I think a lot of people feel that way because it'd just be too much work otherwise. People have no concept of what it's like to have to forage or to even farm for survival. But I think those that do, even if we have to change robes and come back, it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal experience. It'll be the capstone experience that anybody could ever have in any life. I'm looking forward to it. I'm dreading it. I just know that what we got here is not enough for me. I know there's more, and I know a lot of other people feel the same way.
There's more to life than fornication, defecation, and murder.
Mm. Yeah, that's certainly true.
And when we call it in, then we'll experience it. When we're through tasting all of these different sensationalisms that happen in the physical world and in the world of man, which is a very small world, we'll be able to access a higher frequency. And we already are doing that without trying. I remember sitting there with the Humbas in South America and doing ceremony on top of the Mayan pyramid, and Mayan children coming up and for the first time hearing their own Mayan language being sung to the mountains, and condors appeared out of nowhere. Four condors circled on top of the pyramid. The Irish Catholic Catholics thought that it was a coincidence. The Germans thought it was cute, and the Mayans were in tears. Because of gratitude. Because they were acknowledged. And this earth right now, you know, the earth responds off us. As we think, so it reacts. If we love our garden grows where nobody else's garden grows. I don't care about permaculture. I don't care about science. I don't care about any of that stuff. If you have a drought, if you have 120-degree weather, the garden ain't going to grow. The Hopis grow corn in a place that there's no water because they sing rain to the corn. And these are the elemental, fundamental realities of life. How we live and walk upon this earth is how she responds to us. Our mother, she is our mother. And she responds to us by our needs. And we are never not given what we need unless we're in a place where we shouldn't be. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a place that you're not supposed to be here, and you're not supposed to be doing that, well, the door's closed. The plumbing doesn't work. The car breaks down. It's telling you, leave here. Come over here. So we lost the ability to hear that quiet inner voice.
I think you and I were talking about this before, you know, the only time anything ever breaks down for me is when I get a little money. You know, the Creator holds together my car and my computer and my life with baling wire, but let me get a little bit of money and immediately something breaks down. Yeah, well, yeah, you know, and you know, you turn your life over to Creator, and he makes your plans for you. And you know, there's it's all right, it's all right. You just have to learn not to make plans for your money. But you know, after doing this for 20 years now, I can see, well, I can see looking down the road that if a major cataclysm does come, that I'll be darn glad that I trusted the Creator enough to make those kind of plans for me. Because right now, you know, there may be some inconveniences. Yeah, I could have taken a different road. You know, I could have stayed in my profession and have a comfortable home and own all this stuff. But, you know, when the electric power grid went off, all that stuff would have been absolutely useless. I wouldn't have water to my home anymore, and I'd be living near some city where I could make a lot of money, and all of a sudden, oh, wow, gee, that stuff I read about the Hopi 20 years ago, that was true. And I never heard the door slam when it slammed behind me. So you never know what you just don't know what you're missing until it's gone.
Sounds like an old blues song. But we're at a point now where how we walk this earth is based upon our choice. And choice isn't necessarily easy. Because you can choose to walk the beauty path, or you can choose to walk the path of pain. You can choose to embrace the dream, or you can choose to go into the nightmare. So it's all about choice. And how many things have we heard relating to ancient prophecies about in these final days? These are the final days. That we would be, there was a blank page. They couldn't see what was happening. And it was deliberate. It's absolutely deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time that we write our destiny. We write our destiny on the pages of life by living experience,
mm-hmm.
by actions that we take, by thoughts that we hold, and how we react to each other.
Yeah, it's like Sylvia Brown was saying, you know, she could go out and go forward in time and get answers, but she said she got, you know, forward, what is it, about 15, 20 years, and she couldn't see. And, you know, it made her wonder, so.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
And we're in that time. We're in, you know, as Greg Brayton said, after you read your book and my book.
Well, we want to...
Between worlds.
Yeah, and, before we wind it up, why don't you tell folks about Trinity and what we're going to be doing.
You mean Trilogy?
Trinity or Trilogy Broadcasting.
Trilogy Radio. Very simply put, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of human beings who are hungry for truth and for knowledge, for information. Talking to real people, talking about subjects that have substance, both on a spiritual aspect, without feeling confined or guilty, because they tend to be that way, spiritually. They're spiritual people. Also, the ways of those of us who have chosen to be Oti Pimsulak, those who own themselves. And there is a group of people in the world that makes up better than half the world that I call the creative collective. And the creative collective are the people who are going through this time, but they are aware and they are awake. And the voices of people have been silenced. And there are these media conglomerates that are deliberately, maliciously, and methodically trying to shut down the voices of the people. And they're doing it so that, what other reason would they do it for, except that if you think that you're all alone, and the guy over in Canada thinks he's all alone, and the guy in Florida thinks he's all alone, and the guy in Missouri thinks he's all alone, and no one else thinks like him, or no one else has seen chemtrails in the sky, no one else has seen the deer getting sick and laying down and dying, no one has seen the trees dying, no one has seen people coming down with all these strange things, and is it superstition or is it real? And all of these stories we're going to be bringing together through a network called Trilogy Radio, which will be available initially, as we are now on the internet. And then we will be, hopefully, with a little bit of help and a little bit of luck and strong prayers, we'll be on the satellite, and it will be an independent network. It's a communal network.
Yeah, we're just starting out. You know, I'm, you know, we're yeah, you know, I got the, you know, the sound's not the best right now. You know, I got a microphone taped to the earpiece, and I'm listening through headphones. You know, but maybe tomorrow or next week, you know, we'll have an old people. Yeah, you know, yeah, you talk about your Indian car. Well, this is your Indian radio station. So shoestrings, bailing wire, and whatever, but it'll, that's what we're here for, and, you know, we may not have the 10 million people that your friends have listening every night, but, you know, the ones that, are supposed to listen will listen, and we're going to make it possible for people to listen to past broadcasts, and, so they'll have a source that they can listen to.
So, I think everyone will have fun if they have a little bit of patience and understand that we're piecing things together after the deluge.
Mm-hmm.
And we're coming out with the voices, so the voices won't stop. The voices won't stop. And
yeah.
I think it's also important that people write, email you, and let us know that they're hearing us. Because otherwise, it's just me and Blue Otter talking.
Yeah.
We can hear the thunder of our own voices without much problem.
Well, I'm looking forward to hear you talking about alternative health, and I know you probably got a ton of people that you'd love to go into depth with and not have to worry about whether the content's going to be allowed or if you do talk about.